to be a stud or not to be a stud? That is the question I ask when we speaketh of Daniel Jones. Let's get the damn show started.
Listen, when Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike grab mics, it's real sports, real talk, on the field or on the court. If it happened in New York, it's covered like a blanket, dog. Interviews are ill, simply up close and personal. Batter up, Lloyd's batting first, set the tone. Mike's either at the stadium or the garden on the phone. Here we go, Giants are Jets, Yankees are Mets, Knicks are Nets. This is only an intro, the show is next.
A-O-B! And please, pardon my fresh, as we bring you all new episode of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, today is Monday, October 7th, 2018, and this show airs live every single Monday from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, TuneIn, Google Play, Pocket Cast. Be sure to hit that subscribe button so you won't miss a damn thing. And if you got any questions that you'd like for me and Mad Mike to answer on this show, you can always shoot them through email to lloyd@partmyfresh.com, or you can send them directly to the website. Me and Mad Mike are also on social media, listeners. Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Instagram. Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Twitter. L-L-O-Y-D to help you out with the spelling, as we have a great show for you today, listeners. We're going to talk baseball playoffs, and the Yankees have taken a 2-0 league on the Minnesota Twins, as the Houston Astros has done the same to the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. And did the Oakland A's make a mistake by pitching the starting pitcher that they did? We're going to touch up on that. We're going to talk some NFL football. We're going to talk some Giants. We're going to talk some Jets. And the NBA preseason has kicked off as the Brooklyn Nets had their first preseason game. So it's always listening. Let's buckle up, sit back and relax, and start spreading the news. Hey, yo! Let's get it!
How sweet it is. It's Monday. That means the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show is back. Let's go.
As always, we gotta find out where the Mad Mike is and where he's calling from. Yo, Mad Mike, where you at today, baby?
Lord, I'm on the road. I'm in Minnesota, where I anticipate breaking out the broom today as our New York Yankees sweep the Minnesota Twins.
Listen, Matt, what the first round is, what, best of five, right?
Best of five, yeah.
Correctly, and look, the one question mark that we had in mind, Mad Mike, when it came to the New York Yankees, was just starting pitching, all right? And Paxton, and he pitched a gem of a game, but he pitched well enough to keep them in game one, and the Yankees got a victory in game one, a come-from-behind victory by some sloppy play in the field by Minnesota.
I thought he pitched a hell of a game.
No, I'm not saying he didn't pitch a bad game. I'm just saying that, you know, I mean, obviously he gave up two cheapy home runs. He gave up a big hit with two outs in the inning. But, you know, obviously the Yankees were able to come back because Minnesota played some sloppy defense.
Well, that's the thing, though, Lloyd. That's where I think we differ just a little bit on Paxton. I think the one home run in the first inning burned him. But the second home run over right field, it went just over Judge's glove. That's not a home run in any other ballpark. I know it's a home run in Yankee Stadium, but it's not a home run anywhere else. And let's be honest, that third run doesn't score if Giancarlo Stanton is not the left fielder. He turned a single into a double and then dropped the single that eliminated his opportunity to make a play at the plate.
No, you're right. You're right. So, I mean, you know, that was the thing. We went over who we feel should be in the field to play to start the game or during this series. And I had Giancarlo Stanton in left field. Left field is a tough position to play in Yankee Stadium, and he's not 100%, so to speak, Mad Mike. So I don't know if Aaron Boone might make adjustments moving forward. Obviously, the Yankees have a 2-game lead in this series. And Minnesota will have to win 3 in a row to take it back from him. I don't know if he sticks with Giancarlo Stanton until Minnesota may win. You know, hopefully they don't. But if maybe Minnesota wins the game, maybe he changes that. Who knows? But you are right. He is a liability in left field, but he's also not 100%. You know, and it was 2 months ago, Mad Mike, when New York Yankees manager Aaron Boone, he kind of declared that he would actually be in favor of a mercy rule in Major League Baseball. And after watching, you know, this team dismantle the Minnesota Twins in the first two playoff games, you know, maybe he's proving his point, Mad Mike, not for nothing. And can we call off the rest of the American League Division Series? But the hype, listen, the hype heavyweight fight between the two most explosive home run hitting teams in baseball history has turned into a first-round TKO. Now, look, I'm not trying to jinx this team, but the Yankees battered the Twins once again Saturday, you know, in an 8-2 in a game that was a laugh about a third inning, Mad Mike. You know, the Yankees have now spent nearly 8 hours the past 2 days pummeling the Twins by a total of 18 runs or 6 runs in the first two games at Yankee Stadium, moving within one game, like you said, from wrapping up the best of five division series in game three. So hopefully they can continue to play solid baseball, Mad Mike, and pull off this sweep.
But like I text Joe Rivera on at the Saturday night game, I text him and because, you know, he called Minnesota one of the biggest frauds because, you know, he thought this was like we did. He thought this was going to be a tough series. It wasn't just their offense. It was the fact that they were the best road team in all of baseball and it wasn't close. They, you know, we're talking about double-digit games. But as I had said to him, I said to him, basically, I think they only had two hitters on the entire roster that qualified for a batting championship that hit over 270. Now, that's not to say that they don't have good hitters. It just meant that, to me, they didn't have a large enough sample size. They had enough players that we could either say weren't healthy all year or had enough holes in their swings where the Yankee pitchers, even though it's not the Houston Astros rotation, I thought that if our guys could go out there and execute soundly, there was enough holes in those bats where we can get some big-time outs and avoid big-time inning. And I think that so far we've done that. I also said to him that, I'd equate them being frauds to the fact that they played in one of the worst divisions. We're talking about between the White Sox, between the Royals, and between the Detroit Tigers, those teams accounted for 306 losses. The Twins played a total of, it's 57 games against those three teams. You can get real fat on those three teams. While you can say the Yankees played Toronto and they played Baltimore, I could also say they played 100 win team in Tampa Bay 20 times, and they played the Boston Red Sox 85 wins 20 times. So, you know, there you have it.
Here's the thing now, Mike. Now, I don't know if I'm actually correct on this, but the Yankees have played the Twins, what is it, a total of 12 or 13 times in the playoffs, dating back to October in 2004, and have won every single game. How crazy of a stat is that? And that is the longest postseason winning streak by any team against an opponent in Major League Baseball history. And here's another fact.
Yeah, they have 14 straight wins.
Huh?
They have 14 straight wins against the Minnesota Twins, I believe it is.
Thank you for correcting me on that. And the Twins, who also play Oakland, the Oakland A's, during that stretch, have now lost 15 consecutive playoff games, another baseball record. All right? And enough preliminaries, please. But, you know, let's bring the American League matchup everyone has wanted to see all season, and that's the Yankees versus the Astros. Again, not getting too far ahead of ourselves, but, you know, the Astros are handling their business against the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, you know, in that division, in that playoff series, Matt Mike. But I just to jump off topic, but I want to get your opinion on this, okay? Because Tampa Bay played the Oakland A's for that one game, that wild card game, to proceed to the next round, right, Matt Mike? Why did Mike Fryers from Oakland?
Okay, Mike Fryers.
Why didn't he pitch? Why didn't what's the other guy that they have there that they got from Kansas City? The pitcher that was in Kansas City. But either way, I'm saying they didn't have their best pitcher on the mound to pitch that game.
It was Sean Manaea, right? I believe it was Manaea who pitched.
Yeah, but that wasn't him. That wasn't their best pitcher.
But it was.
Did they do it for a matchup? Does he pitch well against Tampa Bay normally? Like, he wasn't the pitcher I was expecting to be out on that mound for that game, Matt Mike.
No, but at the same time, they I guess this is the thing, man. The opener is great when it works, and the opener is bad when it doesn't. And Manaea has had some success in the rotation, but he, you know, I don't think we can deny that he was one of their best bullpen arms this season. He had 30 innings of he was 4-0 with 30 innings pitched this year, and he had like something like a 1.25 ERA. I mean, you know, his WHIP was extremely low. I mean, we're talking about like a quarter of a percentage under one. So he basically, you know, he was giving up less than one runner on base per nine, you know, per inning. So he seemed like a fairly safe bet. And not only that, Lloyd, he had only given up, he gave up less than 5 home runs as a reliever this year. And think about it, in a game where a season where the long ball was as prevalent as it was, they had a guy in their ballpark, which is a big, spacious ballpark, who just didn't allow home runs this year. I don't, once again, I think the logic behind it works. I just think that the opener is a dangerous thing when it doesn't work.
I didn't know much about this young man. That's why I was asking you. He just was the last person, you know, in that rotation I was expecting to start that game. You know, but
no, he wasn't a starter this year.
But throwing the stats out there, pitcher, I should say, not starter, but pitcher. I still wasn't expecting him to start. You know, but if you, everybody's analytical and statistics, so, I mean, if those are his numbers, then I guess I can see why Oakland did run him out there in that game.
No, you know, but like I said, that's why I say it's funny. You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't, right? Because if they didn't have a clear-cut guy who they felt like can carry them 5 strong innings out of the rotation, it probably is smarter with the off day. You know, the AL was actually starting that Friday. So, you know, they played on Tuesday. You go to the opener if you feel better about it. Use the pen and get through the game, and then, you know, you set your rotation. Because remember, the A's were playing up until like early last week or midway through last week. They never got a chance to set their rotation, set their lineups, you know, cruise to the playoffs, because they were battling for that wild card spot with Cleveland.
Yeah, I figure, you know, you gotta get to the next round, and you know you gotta give it all you got to get there. But I mean, whatever. It was just, you know, a question I had wanted to run past you just to get your thoughts on it, because it had me scratching my head. But back to the Yankees, Matt Mike, because, you know, we was going over their lineup, you know, and we were saying that, you know, they may not have the best starting rotation, but we both agreed that they do have the best lineup 1-9 in Major League in this playoff series, and the Yankees have a slash line of .297, which is batting average, .446. And .516 in this series alone, reaching base 37 times, including 16 walks and 2 hit by pitches. And they seem to be running deep counts against this Minnesota's pitching staff, against the Minnesota's pitchers, Matt Mike. And it starts with not being terrified to throw the ball over the plate. They have wanted, you know, they have waited and Judge and Giancarlo Stanton 7 times. They walked them 7 times. Giancarlo Stanton is laying off of that slider. That pitch that's tough for him to see, and that's key. That's mean he's seen the ball well at home plate. And everyone in the Yankees lineup but number 9 hitter Gio Urshela has walked at least 1 time in a series, Matt Mike. So everybody's seen the ball well, and everybody's having really good at-bat thus far against the Minnesota Twins in this series.
Yeah, they've had moments, though, and I know I'm going to be nitpicking. But, you know, it was amazing to see them see over 190 pitches in game one. And then the way they came and worked Dubnyk to start that opening frame in the first, it was beautiful. You could see it coming all over again. Guys, like you just said, were taking tough pitches. Guys were working walks. For them, it's about traffic on the bases. They're getting people on. They took a little while to get the big hit, but they were getting people on. But in that second inning, man, this is where they get into trouble. In that second inning, you have a guy, that's rattled. For the most part, you saw the entire pitching staff for the Minnesota Twins were rattled on in game one. And, you know, you had Duffy who couldn't throw strikes. Dubnyk was struggling. But in that second inning, Torres and Gary Sanchez, both, you know, just swinging and swinging and swinging at everything they see and bailing this guy out. And if not for Deedee, you know, having that I don't know, what do you call it, a cue ball down the third baseline to extend the inning, you know, a couple more batters just to get, you know, to get LeMahieu up there to work a count. The Yankees have to understand that with that lineup, they've got to be able to continuously get to the bullpen. And if you're going to have a guy like Torres, or I'm not going to say Torres, we know Torres is, you know, working some tough at bats, but Gary, you can't be swinging at balls in the dirt when everybody else is taking borderline, you know, strike ball calls. You can't be swinging that ball so far out of the zone and helping these pitchers out. That's going to kill us in Houston. He's got to fix it this series.
Yeah, and the Twins are trying anything to break the Yankees' hex. They've already used their Cy Young winners, 20-game winners, and numerous aces to stop the inglorious streak. You know, this night they resorted to, I want to get your thoughts on this, you know, also, because the young man that started the second game, he was an Uber driver, all right? Dubnyk.
Yep.
You know, he was making only his sixth start of the season, and, you know, he lasted two innings, but the Yankees fans was chanting Uber, 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 and some people took offense to that or, you know, didn't like it because, you know, when this young man was playing minor league ball, you know,
Tell him to go buy a ticket to a different ball game, to a different park. We do whatever the hell we want in our park.
And you know, it's tough for a minor leaguer, but this is, the Yankee fans have always been this way. You know, always been this way.
Come on, man. When they were going after Keuchel, when they were screaming, who's your daddy, going after Pedro, let's stop. You know, it's time to stop already.
You know, the Yankees scored.
Give me a break.
They scored seven runs, you know, in the inning, sent it 12 men to the plate. And Deedee hit a grand slam off Duffy. You know, just a piece of franchise history by becoming the first player to produce multiple hits in a postseason inning. All right, and Yankees ace, what can we say about Masahiro Tanaka, Mad Mike? Aaron Judge was quoted as calling him a killer. He did the
right. Yeah, I'm going to tell you one thing about that. I'm going to tell you one thing about this, and I hope he makes me eat my words, but you could see in the one inning where he struggled is the one inning, and you heard John Smoltz say it. You heard him say it throughout the entire game. He just kept saying, the Twins hitters have to show more patience with him. He's not throwing balls in the strike zone. If you start taking some pitches, some of these tougher pitches, you're going to work his count. You're going to get guys on base. And you'll start to chip away. And the only inning that they did that is the inning where they started to chip away and had him in trouble. The reason I bring that up is because if John Smoltz sees that, you know, an analytical team to the extent that Houston are, you know, they're not going in there whacking against him. They're going to go in there and they're going to try to, you know, run his pitch count up and stress him out. So I know it was a good start yesterday, but the Yankees have to change the game plan up if we make it to Houston.
Five innings, giving up just three hits. You know, the bullpen, you know, did the rest of the work. And the Yankees are now trying to put the Twins away. They start Luis Severino. You know, so Luis Severino, you know, is considered the Yankees' ace. Now, you know, the Twins have to face him. And their top relievers, Duffy has a 21.60 ERA, yielded six base runners, and ending in two-third and permitting more inherited runners to score in two nights than he has all season. And Miguel Sano, who hit 34 home runs in 106 games during the regular season, has struck out six times.
But like I said, and this is what I said, the Yankees pitchers can execute. Miguel Sano hit 34 home runs, but Miguel Sano hit 240.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying?
You know,
in the playoffs, and that's the one thing we've seen with the Yankees over the last few years. In the playoffs, all those bombs are going to go away. Why? Because you're no longer playing teams that don't belong. You're no longer you're not getting fat on the Baltimore Orioles anymore. And that's what I'm saying about the Minnesota Twins. If you're hitting 240 against the likes of the Royals, Tigers, and White Sox, what do you think is going to happen in the playoffs? Your weaknesses, the holes in your swing, they're going to get exposed. or they're going to get maximized. Yeah. And the one good thing I'll say, they executed.
Here's another theme. Here's another good stat, man, Mike. The Yankees have gone down in order just twice this series. And they didn't go down in order a single time in game two, which is on Saturday night. Just twice. And that was in game one. That was in game. That's incredible. That's incredible. When you talk about being savages, that is a true definition of being of a savage lineup. And like you said, Gary Sanchez has to get his act together. You know, Gio Ursula is not, this lineup is scary. It is.
Listen, when you're number eight hitter is Didi Gregorius, you're in good shape. Even with him struggling, we know what he's capable of. We know what he's done in the playoffs over, you know, we know what he's done with the bat outside of his first year as a Yankee. And that's your number eight hitter. So think about that. Gary Sanchez, they have to figure him out. Gary can be scary, but Gary's starting to have too many holes in his swing, too. And I don't know where they come from, because we saw him over his first couple of years here. He's a 270, 280 hitter, that kind of hitter. He's not this 220, 230 guy. And whatever the approach is or whatever they've changed, they got to get back to it, because Gary's strong enough to hit home runs, Lloyd, especially in this live ball era. He's strong enough to hit 30 home runs as a line drive hitter, gap to gap. And they got to change this.
Is game three tonight, man, Mike, or is it tomorrow?
Tonight.
Okay. Listen, let's go Yankees. Let's go Yankees. Let's put these boys away. First things first, handle your business against the Minnesota Twins and then move forward. But let's take care of business. And I am pulling for the Tampa Bay Double Rays, even though I don't think they're going to beat the Houston Astros. But I am pulling for them. I am. They have a tough task, man. Tough task. I think Garrett Cole struck out, 13 guys or 15 guys?
Yeah, they just, if we're being honest, they just don't have the offense. And Houston's probably the worst matchup for them because of Houston's pitching staff. Because they can pitch, Houston can just match Tampa Bay with the pitchers. But Tampa can't match Houston with the hitters, and that's what it's been. It was just
great point.
They weren't blowouts by any stretch.
No,
they were tough games.
Tampa. Let's get it together. Let's get it together and win some baseball games. I'm pulling for you, and I'm sure Mad Mike is also. Let's talk a little bit about a little bit basketball, Mad Mike, before we go to the break. As the Brooklyn Nets open their four-game preseason schedule on Friday night at the Barclays Center, they beat a basketball club from Brazil by the score of 137-89. Taurean Prince led the Nets with 22 points. He was 6 of 8 from three-point range, and he shot 8 of 10 overall to lead the Nets in double figures. The Nets shot 60% and had 40 assists on 51 field goals. All right? Now, that's a good sign, but obviously they were playing, I hate to say this, but they were playing a bunch of bums, all right? They were playing a bunch of bums, all right? Leading by 21 points at halftime, and that's open the second half on a 17-0 run that included two Prince three-pointers. He had two three-pointers, all right? And they rolled at halftime. The Nets went with a starting lineup of Spencer Dinwiddie, LeVert Prince, Riddings, Kukos, and Allen. In addition, despite the night off of Kyrie Irving, all right, Joe Harris was held out of action as well. Harris spent 6 weeks practicing with Team USA through the middle of September. It's expected that Kyrie is going to play against the LA Lakers, Matt Mike, and LeBron James. Taurean Prince, he keeps on checking off boxes on his way to his official regular season with the Brooklyn Nets. And coming into camp, man, Mike, Prince was a player consistently cited by teammates for looking sharp in the offseason workouts and pickup games. And head coach Kenny Atkinson affirmed that impression during a week of training camp, practices, and then again on Friday night. So he's making a strong case, man, Mike. He's making a strong case. Look, I mean, we talked about Kyrie Irving. And Kyrie Irving, he hurt himself. What does he have, like a facial fracture? That he hurt himself during practice. It's going to be interesting to see how he fits into this equation with this team, Mad Mike.
Listen, and this ain't salty because, you know me, if I had my way, he wasn't exactly the guy that I wanted. He was a guy I thought we were going to end up with, but he wasn't, I'm not his biggest fan. I honest to God think that he's sabotaged. I think he's a fake leader, and I think he's way too injury prone, and it proves it. I mean, you could say fluke injury or not, but think about this for a second. With the amount of money that they've spent, this is their roster for good, for better or worse, for the next 4 years. There's no improvements coming. This is either going to be KD bounces back and Kyrie stays healthy, and they do something or nothing at all. And I don't know, man. You have any faith? Are you surprised to hear that Kyrie missed the game because he was hurt? Another thing, I absolutely hate that they play preseason games against these foreign teams that don't belong on a basketball court. I just do, because what do you get out of that? You won by 50, you embarrass the team in a game that doesn't matter.
I agree. So I'm with you on that. I was just, it's funny, because I was going to say that as well. And I watched another game where the Houston Rockets beat up on another European team. And I said the same exact thing.
Yeah, I read something, though, that they considered firing Daryl Morey over some comments he made about that game or something like that. I didn't get the details on it fully, but.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that. We may have to look into that and see if we could talk about that real quick on next week's show or even this show. But. Yeah, these European teams, man, they just, it's almost like, how when you have a top-ranked college football team and they play them against a weak school. What satisfaction you get out of beating up on somebody that you're going to kick the hell out of? I don't understand. So, I'm talking about stats and all this other kind of stuff. If he pulls this, if these players pull these same stats off against the LA Lakers, then you're saying something to me. You're saying something to me if you're able to do this against equal NBA talent. And it makes no sense to me that they have them play against these European teams. None.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, for me personally, I just think, like, you see integrated practices in football where two teams will practice against each other. And then I don't understand why the NBA doesn't adopt something like that. No reason for you to be playing European teams. In the preseason. The preseason about getting, I don't know, man. It's there's a lot of things that I don't like. But whatever.
So also, Mad Mike, LaMelo Ball, which is the youngest of the Ball brothers, supposedly he's getting a lot of looks while he's playing over there in Europe. And he could very well be a top pick in next year's NBA draft.
Lord, this is why I don't like, this is why I hate the media in this country. This is why I hate basketball scouts in this country. Listen, on talent alone, Lonzo Ball was worth the number 3 overall pick. Has he played amazingly? No. Has he stayed healthy? No. Because if it's healthy, he hasn't been able to develop. Did we know that he was coming in with a broken jump shot? Yeah. Did they know he was going to shoot 45% from the field? I mean, from the free throw line? No. But here's one thing I will tell you. LaMelo Ball beating up on inferior competition out there, let's be honest. We're not talking about him playing in La Liga or top national, international European competition. That's not what he's doing. He's playing against guys that are probably worse than some of the college kids in our game now, today. But at the same time, dude, what do you think him going number one is going to do with his father who's under investigation for embezzlement right now? It's just going to empower him even more.
Yeah, it's a shame that the middle son...
That's where Alonzo's not worth the headache.
Yeah. I agree. And that was the biggest thing, even when Lonzo came in to the NBA, was his father. You know what I'm saying? If you drafted him, you had to deal with the headache, which is known as his father.
Yeah, so explain to me why this is going to be any different. Lonzo wasn't even the number one overall pick. He was the number 3. So if LaMelo comes in as the number one, what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, it's sad, but you're like almost giving the villain power again. You know what I'm saying? It's almost like, and he's going to go back to I told you franchise. So, and
you know, my goal is to get all three of my sons playing on the same team, and I want them to play for the, you know, the Houston Rockets, and let's make that happen, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, my son doesn't suck. Your coach sucks. Your franchise sucks. Your owner sucks. Your fan base sucks. It's everybody but them. Like, come on, dude. You can't do it.
I guess we can hope is that he doesn't end up on the Knicks, because we don't need that. We already have enough nonsense going on in the organization as is to bring him into the mix.
Can we talk about that? Can we talk about Steve Mills? And I don't like to be conned, Lloyd. I don't like to be conned. I don't like when someone tells me I got to turn on the stupid button. You know what I mean? Come on, Mills. We know that the game plan, you didn't execute the game plan. When you traded away KP, when you opened up all that cap space, you didn't go to Dolan and show him this list of all these players that we got. This is not what you showed him and said, hey, this is a winning formula right here. This is what's going to take us back to the promised land. No, you didn't do that. So don't get on the mic now and tell us that's what you did. That's why we hate your ass. We're tired of being lied to. We're tired of people looking us in the eye and telling us lies through the camera.
You know what it is, man, Mike? He's taking credit for something that he really hasn't done. I still feel, and I'm sure you agree with me, that he should have been fired when they fired Phil Jackson. He should have been gone. He should be going out the door. And the one person, in my opinion, Mad Mike, that has put the Knicks in a position that they're in right now is Scott Perry. Scott Perry. Steve Mills is kind of shut up and let Scott Perry do his thing and has kind of grabbed on his coattails. And Scott Perry is pretty much pulling him along and not throwing him under the bus. But
here's the thing about Scott Perry real quick. We don't know if we're going to give Scott Perry a pass just yet. Why? Because we don't know if this coach he hired was the right guy for the job.
No, yeah, that's the one thing that the one blemish on his, you know, on his portfolio, so to speak, is that. You know, I would have loved to see the Knicks bring in Mark Jackson. I still feel that the Knicks should have brought in Mark Jackson. And I think that they brought in Fizdale. The main reason why they brought in Fizdale was to get Kevin Durant.
Yes.
And that failed.
And not for nothing, but I kind of also feel like that's one of the biggest reasons Scott Perry got this job, was his connection to Kevin Durant. And that scares the hell out of me that I feel that way, and here's why. Because we've seen that Mark Jackson build a program. We've seen that he can cultivate, he can develop, and restore confidence in younger players, the Splash Brothers and Draymond Green. I don't know, everyone looks at what they are now, but people don't remember who came in and created that. Now, David Fizdale, on the other hand, I don't know what he's done. He took over a Memphis team that was already playing under Lionel Hollins in the playoffs. That was already a second-round playoff team under Lionel Hollins. I'm not making that up. The same Lionel Hollins that I believe finds a place on the Nets coaching staff. But here's the thing. If you're wrong again, how many more years have you set back this franchise by not getting that free agent, by not getting free agents this year, by not being able to develop? I mean, Kevin Knox has looked like one of – it's so bad, Lloyd, that I just read an article last week that they've already told him he's not promised any real minutes this year. He's got to go out there and earn it. And then I'm going to ask you this. If that's what we're doing now and we're taking minutes away from Kevin Knox to give them back to veterans, is that how you develop younger players?
Listen, we said that with Frank Ntilikina last year. And they still wasn't giving him minutes, and the Knicks were getting their butts handed to them night in and night out.
But that's my point. And yeah. Now if that's the thinking, now can you go out there and play? And this is the problem I have with the Knicks. This is the one problem I have with this roster. How can you go out and give R.J. Barrett the time if you're now telling Kevin Knox that he's got to earn his time? Now the rookie,
they're loaded at so many positions that they already have young talent for. You know what I'm saying? Like the two guard, the three guard. So how do you get those guys, how do you give them the opportunity to grow? And you know what?
Yeah,
this is where we see if Fizdale earns that paycheck this year, Mad Mike.
And here's another question I ask you. What if Fizdale can't develop Dennis Smith Jr. as a point guard.
Listen, it's
time to develop.
Supposedly, that's what his strength is, and if he can't do that, then he has to go.
But yeah, we all know. Here's the thing: if he can't do it, then Dennis Smith Jr. is playing where? The two guard position, right? Which cuts into RJ Barrett's minutes, or RJ's got to move to the three. If he moves to the three, now he's starting to cut into the development of Kevin Knox and, dare I say, Frank Ntilikina. You see what I'm saying? So it's going to be a problem.
And I still think that the Knicks have enough young talent and veteran talent to make the playoffs. And they still can do it, man, Mike. You know, one thing the Yankees have always been really good at is integrating rookies with the talent, with the veterans. Or can the Knicks have to do this? And like you said, this is a true testament where you see what this organization is made of, the top, you know, the leadership of this organization, the coach, the general manager, et cetera, et cetera. This is where you see what those guys are made of.
And that's the thing. And that's why I think, like what you said, this is the key, that they get the right coach, that Scott Perry get the right coach, because it feels like it was more about lending yourself to free agents. But if he can develop, the Knicks have a lot better foundation than what the Nets have as far as young players go. Remember, and the reason I say that is D'Angelo Russell's not there no more. While the Knicks landed themselves a 25-year-old in Julius Randle, that could be a prize free agent. You can add to the nucleus of Dennis Smith, Kevin Knox, Frank Ntilikina, RJ Barrett. There's going to be enough foundational pieces here if he can coach and develop the way they want us to believe he can. And then you do have money. Yes. And here's another thing. There's a guy running in the Toronto Raptors right now who's a free agent after this coming season. You know, if it doesn't work out and everything looks bad, can you get him over here? Hot commodity.
Who's that? Siakam?
Masai.
The GM. Okay.
You know, something to think about, yo.
You know what? The whole thing with the Knicks, though, man, is that it's to a point now where nobody wants to have a mud pie in their face where it's like, I told you so. And it's the same thing with the Giants organization. You know what I'm saying?
Think that's it, man. Honestly, I think Dolan wants things comfortable around people. And I think that people don't want to come here unless they know that they're going to get 100% free reign. And I think that, you know, from all the losing, I think Dolan, you know, he's got to change his ways. He's got to realize that just having yes men and people like Steve Mills, who's been here through all so much turmoil, gotta go.
Yeah, obviously basketball is coming up, so we'll have so much more to talk about. But let's take a quick commercial break, and we gotta come back, and we gotta talk some football. As both our teams, the Jets and Giants, were in action over the weekend. So we'll be right back with more of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Welcome back to the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. There was some football played over the weekend, Mad Mike, all right? And it's kind of like a pick your poison thing, all right? But I'm going to start off with the New York Football Giants, Mad Mike. And the Minnesota Vikings were able to move, you know, to the 3-2 in the season after defeating my Giants at MetLife Stadium 28-10. All right, on Sunday. And after a roller coaster week, Kirk Cousins was able to keep his detractors at bay. And what I mean by a roller coaster week for Kirk Cousins, him and Adam Thielen was complaining about, you know, not getting the ball and all that kind of stuff. And those guys did nothing but went out and put the hammer to the New York Giants, all right? Put the hammer to them. All right. He hauled in 7 passes for 130 yards and 2 touchdowns, Mad Mike. Dalvin Cook, meanwhile, continued his success on the ground. He rushed for 132 yards on his team. And despite the loss, Daniel Jones and the New York Giants did have some bright moments, in my opinion. All right, Dennis 28-10, Minnesota Vikings butt-whipping they suffered. Specifically in the second half, however, all right, the Giants ultimately struggled to protect Daniel Jones and injury to Wayne Gallman, who had a concussion. They only had 2 active running backs on a roster, Matt Mike. How much sense does that make? And it made them a one-dimensional offense. once Goldman went out.
Yeah, I don't. I think the New York area needs new coaches, and every sport outside of the New York Yankees. Just my personal opinion. But yeah, I don't know what they're thinking. I don't like if you're already shorthanded. I guess they didn't want to waste roster spots on going and getting help because Saquon Barkley insists that he's going to be ready next week against the Pats, you know, which to me is mind-boggling why this team is in a rush to put their best player back.
It's not smart on his part. And obviously, as a player, you want to get back on the field. Right? You want to get back on the field.
You want to develop that chemistry.
But it's up to the organization, man, Mike. He's their crown jewel. Okay, it's up to the organization to put on a big boy pants and be like, you know what? It's not smart. It's not smart to do this. We're going to hold you out. I will hold him out until after the bye week, man, Mike.
You don't come back in 3 weeks from a 6 to 8 week injury, especially for a team that learned I don't want to say serious or how delicate an ankle injury can be the way they lost Odell Beckham when he came back, remember, early and then ended up losing the rest of the season to it. So I honest to God, don't know why they're rushing this back. But I don't know, man. I personally didn't like what I saw at all. They weren't able to protect him. Just in general, I don't like how many throws he had. That's not, especially when you know you're playing a top defensive team. But like I guess what you said, it's not like they had a choice. They only had two active running backs, and one got hurt.
The Giants, they couldn't take advantage of key scoring opportunities in the third quarter. They were able to take the ball all the way down to Minnesota 14, but they were only able to come away with a field goal even after being gifted a first down on an unnecessary roughness penalty. On an earlier field goal attempt. And that gave them a new set of downs. The Giants' next two offensive possessions, Mad Mike, also found themselves deep in Vikings territory, and they weren't able to connect on fourth down. So when you're facing a defense like the Vikings, you need to put up points, like you said.
It didn't shock me. It didn't shock me. It's, you got to think about it. It's not like it's not Washington. You know what I mean? Like Washington was a really bad team. I think we saw that yet again this week. I think Jay Gruden will be fired in the coming days if he's not fired by the end of today. But you saw it in the first half against Tampa Bay. If Tampa Bay didn't, we said it before, right? If Tampa Bay didn't take their foot off the gas, it would be a totally different conversation right now we're having. We'd be talking about, is Daniel Jones really ready for the big time, like everyone says he is?
Now, speaking of that, man, Mike, I'm going to have two questions to throw at you, all right? And despite the loss, you can say that Daniel Jones played well in what was his toughest test as a starter. And what we said, you know, he had Minnesota coming up and he has New England next week. He was 21-38 for 182 yards and a touchdown. He had an interception. His lone touchdown of the day was a beautiful ball thrown to Darius Slayton. And, you know, he hit him in stride in the end zone. And threw the only way he was able to haul it in. He made some pretty nice throws, but New York wasn't able to get the W. They still should feel good, in my opinion, about the rookie quarterback. Now, here's the thing, Mad Mike. You know, we said, do you potentially see, you know, as Daniel Jones being, obviously, I don't think he's an elite quarterback, okay? I don't think, from what I'm seeing right now, I wouldn't put him in that elite quarterback status. And obviously, that can change, listeners. It can change. This is only his third start of the season, so it can change. All right, but do you see him worthy of looking into your crystal ball, Mad Mike, and having an unbiased opinion right now, okay? Do you see him as being worthy as a number six pick in this past draft, Mad Mike? At any point in his career, can you see him as being worthy, as even if it's not this year, can you see him as being worthy of a six pick?
The sixth pick? I don't know. Here's what I see when I see Daniel Jones. I see a quarterback who is extremely well coached, which we knew. We know that here's a guy who was basically coached to be a pro. So as far as him being ready right now, yeah, he's coming in ahead of what any other rookie would come in as, because, you know, we're talking, once again, David Cutcliffe, we're talking about a guy who's come up through the Manning system, excellent quarterback coach. So what I'm going to say to that is, not do I think I have a franchise quarterback, but do I have a coach that can, I think I have a quarterback that's better coached than any quarterback coming in, even Kyler Murray. I think Kyler Murray has a lot of holes, a lot more holes in this game than Daniel Jones does from a coaching standpoint. You know, he played in he was only a 1 year starter, but he played in a league and a college spread offense. Daniel Jones did not. Question is, do you believe in Pat Shurmur?
I don't.
To continue.
I don't.
Well, then there's your answer. Then to me, you don't have a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, you know, I don't have faith in the Giants coaching staff at all. You know, I've never seen, listen, Janoris Jenkins, man, Mike. All right. After watching this game, man, Mike, and I don't know how your skill set goes from being at the top tier of your position to being one of the worst in your position.
I mean, dude, I don't know if you're talking about Janoris Jenkins or Tremaine Johnson.
Tremaine Johnson is, and they played, they were teammates, but he tackles with it. He can't tackle. He can't. I didn't realize how bad of a tackler he is, man.
It's a front-running defense. He's the kind of guy where you saw him up against, you saw them up against Tampa Bay. You saw him get torched by Mike Evans. It was embarrassing. And then last week, we forget about it because everyone's in love with Daniel Jones. Everyone wants to make the Washington Redskins out to be much better than they really were. And then when you put a real offense and a real defense against these guys today, you saw how bad the coaching was. You see how bad the defensive backs are. We allow ourselves to get fooled because we allow ourselves to go week to week instead of acknowledging what we know. We're like, all right, well, they're back to 2-2, man, Mike. You know, they're and this is not you, but, you know, just everybody. Back to 2-2. Daniel Jones dropping dimes. He's torching defenses. And it's like, you know, Janoris Jenkins, Julius Peppers. Sorry, not a Hall of Famer. But you know what I'm saying? The Jabril Peppers. With the return for a touchdown, and all of a sudden we forget how bad of a defender he's been. We forget what we saw and what we know. And then this week, they come back and then they turn back into pumpkins.
Listen, you have this young man, Julian, obviously the cornerback from Notre Dame, Julian Love, and Corey Ballant. Why not give them playing time, man? Mike, could it be any worse than what's already out there? Can it be? You know, and sometimes some people just need a change of scenery. And who knows? Maybe Janoris Jenkins goes someplace else, Matt Mike, and turns his career around and goes back to being a cornerback that he once was when he came here.
No, I just think he's older already.
Obviously it's tough to cover. NFL receivers are so much quicker and faster right now, and their route running is so much better. So I get that, Matt Mike. But when you come up and you tackle with your head down and you don't make tackles, like Adam Thielen almost ran him over. I'm like, come on, man. Come on. Embarrassing. But they drafted all these cornerbacks, man, Mike, and they still keep on running the same dudes out week in and week out. They keep on running out the same guys. Won't you give Corey Ballantyne a chance at corner? Give Julian Love a chance at corner and see what they
have,
but it can't be any worse.
Who are you going to sit?
Well, I mean, I guess they're giving DeAndre Baker playing time. Listen.
He's a first-round pick. They traded him.
No. Obviously, you gotta play DeAndre Baker and let him go through his learning curve. All right? I get it. I'm okay with letting him get out. Listen, this is not a good defense. Okay? So I'm okay with letting him go through his growing pains. As we say, the Knicks have to do with Kevin Knox and R.J. Barrett, correct? So I would Janoris Jenkins, man, Mike, I would cut him. Is he really worth all the money that they're paying him? I would cut him or I would bench him. And if you're going to feel bad about benching him and say, well, how do you bench a player that's making so much money? Cut his rabbit ASS. Cut it.
See, that's the issue I have. That's the issue I have, though. You can't cut him now. And the reason I tell you why you can't cut him now, because the time to cut him was in the offseason, when the money you would have saved would have landed you a pass rusher, right? And now, if you cut him now, what are you getting? Nothing. There's nothing coming. So to me, it's like, now I just got to ride it out and see.
Do you think he's worthy of a third round, a fourth round pick, a fifth round pick? Get something. We said the Giants didn't get enough for Odell Beckham Jr. They didn't get enough for Olivier Vernon. All right, they may not have gotten enough for Jason Pierre-Paul. This would be one player that if the Giants traded him and got a fifth round pick or a fourth round pick or something like that, I would be like, okay. I'm just, you know what I'm saying? Like, I see this for five weeks into the season, Mad Mike. I've seen the same thing from Janoris Jenkins over and over and over again for 5 weeks, man. And I'm just absolutely sick of it because he's one of the highest paid players on this team. And I get it. You know, it was the thing where Betcha or Sherma, you know, they came out against him with Mike Evans and you know, when Mike Evans torched him and say, you want to be the man? Well, here it is. Cover their best receiver. Earn your money. And it's either put up or shut up. And he didn't put up. He definitely didn't pull up. Put up. But whatever, man. You know, let's move on to grading this team. And let's start with the offense. And, you know, there was bound to be days like this for Daniel Jones, you know, who got a first-hand look, as we both agree, of a quality NFL defense. He got a first-hand look what a quality defense looks like. All right? And consider this a lesson. Hopefully it's a lesson learned by Daniel Jones. 21 to 38 for 182, one TD, one interception, was not effective in the red zone. Okay, losing starter running back Wayne Gallman early to concussion was a tough blow, so to speak. As rookie fill-in John Hillman, he had 9 rushes for 20 yards. He struggled. And it was holding penalties on Nate Solder, Evan Ingram, and Solder was beaten by Everson Griffin in the fourth quarter for one of the Vikings' 4 sacks. And a quiet debut for Golden Tate, man, Mike. I didn't even know I forgot he even came back today. He had 3 catches for 13 yards. I'm giving him a D.
Yeah. I gave him an F. But, you know, a lot of it goes into it for me. I gave him an F. I just thought that, you know, they were non-existent. I didn't really, outside of the one throw that to Slayton for the touchdown, I wasn't impressed with them at all. You could say, hey, well, Matt Mike, they were down to their third string running back. That's not my problem. Well, Matt Mike, he's playing a top tier secondary. Not my problem. In the end of the day, I thought it was a piss poor effort for a team that got back to 500, for a coach that was pounding his chest like King Kong. I give him an F. I didn't think they did nearly enough, even if you want to say the second half was much better. I keep saying it. These teams are building big leads against the Giants, and then they're taking their foot off the gas. I mean, if they really wanted to pound them into the ground, that game could have easily been 42-10.
You're right about that. And let's move on to this defense. And the Vikings came in all hot and bothered, in my opinion, about their shoddy passing game, which I talked about with Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs and Kirk Cousins. But they left in Bolton after Kirk Cousins, 22 or 27, Matt White, for 306 yards and 2 TDs. They exploited gaping holes in the middle of the field. Cornerback Grant Haley was beaten by Adam Thielen for a 35-yard touchdown, and no one had any answers for Thielen. 7 for 130, 2 touchdowns. Dalvin Cook, 21 rushes for 132 yards. He did as he pleased. Rookie quarterback DeAndre Baker lost his cool for a moment in the third quarter, was hit with an unsportsmanlike contact penalty. 3 plays later, Thielen beats Baker for a touchdown. Cousins had 278 passing yards by halftime. The Vikings finished with 490 total yards, Matt Mike. 490. 490. 490. 490 total. Listen, this is a week in and week out thing with this team. Week in and week out. Super F.
You know, it's funny because my answer was going to be F. You know why? Because 490 starts with the letter F. That's exactly what my answer was going to be. But to be honest with you, I, like I said, I thought they took their foot off the gas. The turnovers, I think they were a little careless. I thought they did the Giants a favor. Midway through in the first half, at the end of the first half, Minnesota had the ball for almost 19 minutes. They ended the game with the ball for 30 minutes. Does that sound like a team that had their foot on the gas and was still trying to dominate? No. I mean, they had the ball for 13 minutes in the second half and still put up, 10 points in the second half in 13 minutes.
Listen, and moving on to special teams, which to me was the one bright spot for this team in this game yesterday. Rookie Corey Ballantyne, he had a 52-yard kickoff return in the second quarter. Riley Dixon looks like a totally different player this year. His first punt dropped and rolled to the Vikings' 2-yard line. Golden Tate had a 17-yard punt return in the fourth quarter. Aldrick Rojas hit his only field goal attempt from 32 yards. Ahmed Abdullah got free for a 33-yard kickoff return. You know, for the Vikings, and because of that, I'm going to give the special teams a B+, man, Mike.
I gave them an A. And the only thing the one thing you held against them was the Ahmed Abdullah return for 30 yards. It's the only thing that it's crazy to me, but I just every week I see this unit as a bright spot for this team. It's unbelievable to me how consistent they've been compared to the rest of the team. So I gave him an A. Aldrick Rojas has quietly morphed into one of the best kickers in all of baseball, all of football.
Okay, so now let's move on to this coaching staff. And I have a question for Pat Shurmur, Matt Mike, because the Giants ended up getting a safety around the play. How about a quarterback sneak for a quick safe pass to get some breathing room on a 1-yard line rather than a telegraph handoff to John Hillman for a loss? And not much defensive coordinator James Betch again could do trying to cover up, for his ineptitude as a coach. And the damn linebackers, man, Mike, I had no idea who in the hell was playing the linebacker position for the Giants in yesterday's game. No idea who any of them dudes were.
A team that called Carl Banks and Lawrence Taylor Giants.
Yeah, listen.
Have not figured out the linebacker position in the last 5 years.
I'm giving this defense, the coaching staff, an F, and it's F because they need to be fired. Need to be fired, and I'm probably going to give them an F for the remainder of the season because they need to be fired. F. F. F.
Yeah, once again, I'm going to say, unfortunately for us, we have no choice. We have to put the two active running backs on him. But in this case, I'm also going to give David Gettleman an F because there's no reason for you to ever not have enough running backs on the roster. I know, once again, when a guy like Saquon Barkley is on your roster, you're not looking to have a big stable of running backs. He's going to take 80-90% of all the carries. I get it. But once he gets hurt, things have to go out the window. You know what I mean? He's hurt, and that's what you get paid to make tough decisions. If you got to cut a linebacker, you got to cut a defensive lineman or an offensive lineman for the sake of bringing on a third running back, that's what you got to do, man. And that's what I don't understand. I don't like what I see from James Betcher. I don't know if the Giants have the personnel to play 3-4. I don't know if they have the secondary to play 3-4. Shoot, like you just said, they don't have the linebackers to play 3-4. I don't understand why we're in a 3-4. Dexter Lawrence. It was Dexter Lawrence a waste of a pick?
He definitely was.
The reason I'm going to ask you is not even necessarily his performance. What sense does it make drafting a huge space-eating nose tackle and a 3-4 when you don't have the outside rushers to make up the difference?
I mean, if I'm correct, Alabama plays a 4-3. You draft somebody that's coming from a 4-3 system and put them in a 3-4 system. Like, that makes no sense. It doesn't.
Yeah, Clemson does play the 4-3.
I'm sorry, Clemson. That's Alabama. Right, Clemson. I'm sorry. Like, come on, man. Listen, can we just...
Once again, I get it. He's eating up space, and it makes sense if, like I said, you
but
have,
you don't have
pass
any pass rushers.
Look at what the Jets did.
Marcus Golden is their
the
best pass rusher. And Lorenzo Cohen is hurt.
A line.
Dude, this starting linebacker was cut by three different teams before he landed with the Giants. And he was starting middle linebacker. It was disgusting. It was disgusting. Yeah. Now let's move on to something else that was just as disgusting. But I'm okay with giving it a pass, Mike, because I do believe that when your team gets Sam Darnold back, when you get your quarterback back, and I do believe if Sam Darnold was on his team, this team would be a lot different. All right, listen.
I'm happy you're giving passes. I ain't giving none of them passes.
All right, but listen,
like I told you, everybody in New York needs a new coach.
Yeah. I mean, can we imagine where the Jets would be without an offensive mastermind? The Jets remain winless 4 games into Adam Gase's era. Okay, they got spanked by the Eagles 31-6, okay, in Philly. All right, and Sam Darnold, he's still suffering from mononucleosis, sideline for the 3rd straight game. The Jets are 0-4. They only totaled 128 yards and gave up 2 defensive touchdowns. Luke Falk, man, he threw for 98 yards in his first career start. He competed. He was 15-26 for 120 yards, 2 interceptions, and lost a fumble. Who in the hell is their backup quarterback, man?
Luke Falk has 210 yards in 2 games started for this team. And you could tell me he's a 3rd string quarterback all you want. In the end of the day, Luke Falk is only on this team the same way David Fales was on his team when Luke Falk got hurt, because they know Adam Gase's system. And here's what I'm going to tell you, and this is why I don't forgive Adam Gase, and this is why I don't care about the offensive line. I don't care about the players. I thought we were getting a coach. We just fired a coach who was unable to adapt to the players he had. He never adjusted his system to fit his personnel. Now, Adam Gase, I'm really starting to struggle with him too, because you don't see any changes from week to week. You see any changes in the run game? You see any changes in the way he uses Le'Veon Bell, even with the 3rd string quarterback? No. Have you seen Ty Montgomery get on the field at any point as a receiver? No. Have you seen Ty Montgomery and Le'Veon Bell in a split back backfield? No. Have you seen him do anything other than send Robbie Anderson long, where Robbie's not getting, Robbie has no shot of getting open because Luke Falk has one of the weakest arms I've ever seen in my life? Like, his arm is weaker than Chad Pennington after the 3 surgeries. That's how bad it is. So this is the issue I have. Luke Falk and David Fowles are only on the Jets roster because they know Adam Gase's system from Miami. Well, what do we know about Adam Gase's system in Miami? He's never ranked higher than 27th in offensive production in Miami. And yeah, I'm doing an about face. I'm doing an about face for a second time. How many times I got to tell everybody? Jet fans don't know what the hell they feel. Jet fans hated this guy. We always thought he was overrated. We thought Miami was overrated. We never understood why they got all the credit they did under him. And now all of a sudden, I'm over here cheering for this guy and calling him an offensive genius. I haven't seen nothing to tell me that he's an offensive genius. And here's why I say that. Because it's easy for Bill Belichick to coach Tom Brady. But we saw him coach Matt Castle. We saw him coach Jimmy Garoppolo. And we saw him coach Jacoby Brissett. We've seen all these guys win games under Bill Belichick, right? So don't tell me anything about that coach. But I'm going to tell you who have I seen win games under, consistently win games under Adam Gase. Nobody. You're going to hang your hat on Jay Cutler? They didn't win games under Jay Cutler. They didn't win games. Jay Cutler just had one of his best seasons as a quarterback. It didn't equal wins. Peyton Manning? We're not going to give him credit for the greatest quarterback to ever grace the field.
No, you're absolutely right.
Defensively? Defensively, Lloyd, I it's so hard for me to pick on Greg Williams. Greg Williams,
you know,
is
that's
over here
the one thing. The defense actually played well, Matt Mike. In my
they
opinion,
only gave up 17. They only gave up 17 points against this Eagles offense that dropped 31 on Green Bay a week ago. They only gave up 17. and they were on the field for almost twice the amount of time as the offense, and they only gave up 17. Carson Wentz didn't even throw for 200 yards.
No, do you think at some point Jamal Adams implodes and starts to go off? Do you think he loses his meat rocket?
No, I don't, because I think he's too much of a professional. I think that there's enough other guys that he convinced to come here. See, Jamal, the thing I say about him is Jamal knows, he sees the big picture. Jamal's not going to have a meltdown here because it's hard to have a meltdown here and recruit at the same time, because then that's when everyone's going to have, you're going to have to answer those questions. You know, if he had a meltdown last year when all this is going wrong, how does he go to Lev Bell and convince Lev Bell to become a Jet? He can't. So I think what you're going to do is you're going to see all these guys keeping a straight face and try to keep it, keep it cool in the clubhouse. They know. And once again, you know what, man, it's easy. When you know a guy like Luke Falk does not belong in the NFL and he's your quarterback, they, it's easier to accept losses, if that makes sense. It's never easy to accept losses, but it's easier to accept losses when you know how shorthanded you are.
I mean, so who the hell is it? Is Davis Webb the Jets backup quarterback?
No, Luke Falk and David Fells. David Fells came in.
Oh, David, okay. David Fells, all right.
You know what I mean? Like I said, he's only on the roster because he knows Adam Gase's system. And that's what I'm telling you. At some point, you got to get yourself a talented quarterback and say, hey, I have a really talented quarterback that belongs in the NFL. Learn the system. You don't say, hey, you're in the NFL because you know my system. Then you're going to lose. Then your offense is going to be anemic. It's going to be a total embarrassment like it is.
Yeah.
You're telling me that the and that's what I'm trying to say. Like, you can tell me, oh, well, Trevor Siemian was a backup. Well, what was your backup plan to the backup? Because Trevor Siemian wasn't exactly a great backup plan either. You saw how bad he looked in the first half against Cleveland?
Yeah,
he didn't look too good.
Yeah, until he hurt himself.
You know what I mean? So at the end of the day, so what I'm saying is, when I look at teams, again, Carolina's on a 2-game winning streak. You know who they're playing with? Their third-string quarterback. You know why? People are like, well, no, he's a backup. No. Their rookie was a backup. Their rookie is missing time right now. They're playing with their third-string quarterback and winning games. It's not the only one. There's not the only team out there playing with rookie quarterbacks. Jacksonville. Jacksonville's what, 2-3? And they're playing with a rookie backup quarterback. Don't tell me that it can't be done. Fact of the matter is, the Jets just have really bad quarterback talent, but this coach is only concerned with bringing in guys that can play in his system.
All right.
So now, it's a fair question to ask you, does this guy have a good enough system that he should be a head coach in this league?
Well, we'll see. I mean, rarely do you see a coach get fired after 1 year, but I mean, you know, obviously, you know, you keep on spewing out, and so do I. It's time for a change. Across the board,
but rarely do you see a coach get fired the way he did and have a job within 2 weeks, never have to reestablish himself. You know, and when I say a coach, I'm not talking about a Super Bowl winning coach. I'm talking about a guy who came in 23-25, 2 games under 500 as a coach in Miami, and somehow ended up winning, getting a job 2 weeks later. What changes does he have to make because of it?
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. And let's move on to these grades, man. Mike, starting off with the offense. In another week, another putrid performance, in my opinion. And this unit, man, is 128 yards this week and actually reached the end zone once. So it was better than the last outing. The Jets went 3-for-14 on third down and gave up 10 sacks. 10 sacks. Luke Falk won, 15-26, 120, 2 interceptions. A 37.3 rating. He was clearly overmatched, and many of the sacks were on him as he held the ball entirely too long. Le'Veon Bell, 15 rushes for 43 yards. He has 7 catches for 45 yards. He continues to play hard, but not have much to show for it. I'm giving the offense a big fat F, Mad Mike.
F minus.
Okay.
F minus. I have no words for it. What do you want me to say? That Luke Falk is not an NFL quarterback. This offensive line has been putrid. I think Ryan Khalil should have stayed retired. They were down 2 linemen yesterday, but still, Chuma Adoga was getting run over at right tackle. Once again, Ty Montgomery doesn't play until the fourth quarter. I don't understand with an anemic offense the way it is, why you're not using you're not using a variety of players and trying to get, you know, do different things to get open. Bilal Powell played his first snap since one snap outing in week one, I believe it was. How does Bilal Powell only have one snap on the season? If that's the case, why even carry a third running back? We're killing the Giants, but at the same time, if you're not going to use a third running back, why is he even on the roster? So, yeah, if I can get worse than an ass, I would. Robbie Anderson, one catch, 16 yards, by the way. Robbie Anderson, your number one receiver, one catch, 16 yards, only had three targets.
All right, so now let's move on to this defense. And look, the defense wasn't great, but I did think that they played well enough to win the, you know, win the game. The offense could have, they couldn't do anything. If the offense did anything, the Jets would have won this game, Matt Mike. The offense allowed 17 of the 31 points in the game. And this team bottled up Carson Wentz. He was 17 of 29 for 189 yards, one touchdown, you know, for most of the day. The only negatives were no takeaways and only one sack, Matt Mike. But I'm going to give the defense a B+.
Yeah, I gave the defense a B. I wanted to give them an A. Once again, like I said earlier, considering how they shut down this offense that lit up Green Bay, they held the run game in check. Outside of one 40-yard catch from Miles Sanders, they didn't really get beat by you know, the running backs in the pass game. They did a really good job of defending that. These wide receivers didn't go off whatsoever, like you said. Only 189 yards for Carson Wentz. But the issue I have is, like you mentioned, only one sack. Where was Leo? I do understand that Henry Anderson got hurt in the game, shoulder injury, and he was out after the first quarter. But I thought that was going to work in the Jets' favor, as they'd be able to play Leonard and Quinnen both at the same time, and they just didn't do it. And I don't know if that's a coaching decision. I don't know why. But it just made more sense to me to play them both at end on opposite sides of the line and see what you can do from a pass rush standpoint. And they never did it.
All right. So now special teams. Trent and Cannon made the play of the day, in my opinion, for the Jets for covering a muff punt on the Eagles 19 to set up, you know, the Jets only scored a game. And Sam Ficken missed a 55-yard field goal. And punter Lachlan Edwards pinned the Eagles inside their own 23 times, Matt Mike. And because of that, I'm going to give special teams a B-.
I gave them a C. I'm going to tell you why. One, it's I wanted to give them a B-, but I gave them a C instead. I don't like to hold 50-plus yard field goals against a kicker because it's not totally their fault. But at the same time, in a day and age where guys are making – 50-yard kicks like they're 30-yarders. You got to put it through the upright if you have a big enough leg. I don't like what I see from Braxton Berrios, and to me, it's an indictment on the coaching staff right now, coaching being Adam Gase, because it was his pick. We both agree Greg Dortch was dynamic in the return game, and for some reason they chose to move on from him, put him on the practice squad, and go with Braxton Berrios, who I see nothing. He doesn't hit a hole. It's a lot more fair catches. It reminds me a lot of Jeremy Curley, a guy who wants to play it safe, and probably because when you make mistakes in special teams, you find yourself out of the league. Trent Cannon, yeah, he recovered the fumble, but Trent Cannon had two kick returns where he stopped inside the 20. You can't be, you know, you kneel down, you're starting at the 25. If you're going to bring it out, especially with his speed, you better get to that 25 or more. And he's not doing that right now. And that tells me that he has poor vision in the kick return game. I don't like what I see. I gave him a C.
All right, so now let's talk about the coaching staff. And we already gave our feelings on Adam Gase, but we both agree that Falk is not an NFL quarterback. And, you know, I don't know why he didn't get Falk more reps, according to the reports, you know, that was stated in the news. He didn't get a lot of reps. You know, at the moment, you know, this entire offense stinks. Stinks. He needs to show more creativity in his play calling. You know, Greg Williams did another good job, in my opinion, with the defensive unit and kept the Eagles off balance for much of the day, in my opinion. Okay, and because of Greg Williams. I'm sorry?
No. Go ahead.
Oh, you know, I was going to say, because of Greg Williams, he prevented me from giving this coaching staff an F.
All That's right. what I was going to say. It's funny that we say that because you tell me one game where Greg Williams got absolutely shown up, had a bad day. Yeah, Greg, to me, Greg Williams hasn't had a bad game yet.
No, he hasn't. And with that being
said, if he's had any kind of help,
I'm giving the defense a D minus. I mean, I'm sorry, not the defense, the coaching staff. I'm sorry, listeners. I'm giving the coaching staff a D minus.
Yeah, I gave the coaching staff a D plus actually. I don't think that there's much that the offense is killing it by any means, but I don't think that special teams has been a problem. The offense is not moving the ball, so we haven't been able to see if the Jets actually found themselves a kicker. Once again, 55 yarders are you know, while he should be making them, 55 yarders are no gimmies. And you know, we'll see if they found better opportunities later on when Sam's back, when they're, you know, in the 30, 40 yard range. But defensively, I don't know how much more we can ask of this team. From a defensive perspective, it's like, you know, you gave up 17 to this team. You know, a week ago, you only gave up 24 to the Patriots, and they had an amazing second half, you know, 24 to the Browns and 17 to the Bills, but only after CJ got hurt. And not to mention, he's doing all this without CJ Mosley. So, and he's doing this all without CJ Mosley and Avery Williamson and Copeland. He's missing 3/4 of his linebacking crew, and he's still doing this. And as a matter of fact, Jordan Jenkins isn't playing. He's doing this without all four of his starting linebackers right now. Think about that for a second. So, I gave him a D, and I think it's on the back of Greg Williams, man. But Adam Gase, he better figure it out because he can be a one and done. He can.
All right, so there you have it. That's the grades for the Jets. The grades for the Giants, and now it comes to that point of the show that we all know and love, where we let Mad Mike give his rant for the week. So, Mad Mike, what is pissing you off this week?
Lord, we didn't touch on it last week, and I'm assuming we're going to end up talking about it in the coming weeks. But, man, if we ever hear anything about Dak Prescott and $40 million ever again, I think Jerry Jones should die tomorrow. That's what I'm going to say to that. At some point, this kid's got to come out and beat teams that matter. And I really want to go off on Kirk Cousins this week, but after beating the Giants, I can't. But after starting 3-0 and having all this talk about give him his money now, blah, 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 you know, to come out and have a 4-turnover day against the Green Bay Packers after not even – only scoring 3 points the week earlier against a underhanded, you know, Saints team without Drew Brees. You know, give me a break already. It's time to put up or shut up. Enough selling us with this bum quarterback who's just average, maybe second tier at highest, more like a third tier guy. You know, enough already, man. Enough. I'm over it. I know you're over it, and let's just give him his $20 million and tell him to shut his mouth.
And there you have it, listeners. And with that being said, that's going to bring us to a close of this week's show. Me and the Mad Mike like to thank you, the listeners, for rocking out and sticking with us and supporting us and giving us your opinions and giving us thumbs up and thumbs down for what you like and don't like about the show. Keep it coming. We want to thank our producer, Ayo Omar Baker, for rocking out with us and keeping this thing going as well. So, listeners, please have a safe and blessed week. And me and Mad Mike can see you in 7 days. So, hey, yo, let's roll, baby.
I can smell the wonderful scent of a brand new NBA season upon us. Oh, I've been looking forward to it. Preseason is happening right now. I'm paying attention to the Knicks and the Nets. As long as good basketball is being played in the city, I'm all here for it. Appreciate all of y'all checking out the show. It's the Lloyd A. Thompson, the Mad Mike Sports Show. Brand new episodes drop every Monday. If you could subscribe, we would appreciate it. Everywhere podcasts are available, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Of course, follow along at Lloyd A. Thompson on Twitter and Instagram. And if you have any questions or concerns, that you want addressed or answered on a future episode of the show, you can head over to lloyd@partofmyfresh.com, send an email over to the guys, and they got you covered. Once again, this is the Lloyd A. Thompson, the Mad Mike Sports Show, and we'll catch y'all in 7 days for that real sports and real talk. Peace.